Hello, I'm Hayden Fronick, and today I'll be interviewing 48-year-old David Fronick on Desert Island Discs. Desert Island Discs is a show about interviewing people and asking them what music and book they'd like to take to a desert island. Also, David is a successful businessman, father, and husband. So how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, sir?
Good. So let's just get into it. The first song you chose was Limelight by Rush, a rock song that came out in 1981. Could you tell me why you chose this song and the significance it's had on your life?
Sure. Rush was one of my favorite bands growing up, and Rush, this concert was on, this song was on an album called Moving Pictures. It was one of, it was my favorite Rush album, but it was also one of the most significant things to me was it was my first concert I ever attended. I went to the concert, was at Market Square Arena, which was used to be the downtown arena before Bankers Life Fieldhouse, where the Pacers played. And that's where all the big concerts were held. And I went to that concert in 1982, with a bunch of friends is my first concert when I was in junior high. And it was, number one, it was a great show. Rush is a three-man band with probably the best drummer in the world, Neil Peart. And it was a phenomenal show, and it's something I've always remembered just because it was my first true concert to go to by myself with friends.
So that sounds like a really fun time.
It was a great time. Market Square Arena was a neat old building that had a lot of character to it just because it was kind of the first really big stadium ever built in Indianapolis that was for a professional team. Mm-hmm. I went to lots of things there. I went to lots of sporting events with my dad. Hockey games and basketball games were played there. And then all the big concerts that came to Indianapolis were there. So it was a really fun place when you were growing up here. It would be like you going to a concert now at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. That would be the same thing for me.
So it's a pretty sentimental place for you then.
Oh, yeah. It was exciting. It was sad to see it get torn down, but everything changes in life. And that was a place that had to go because better things could, you know, better stadiums were built and mm-hmm. much nicer and much better event venues. And now, you know, Market Square had to go, but it was a great place to go see things. Yeah.
All right, then the next song you have here is Naked by the Bodines, which came out in 1991, but it's also an alt-rock song. Would you explain why you chose this song and some of the, in the background on what, on the impact it had on you?
Sure. Bodines are a band out of Wisconsin, a great band that's not huge like Rush was, but they've been around a long time. In fact, they still play music today. They still play live music in concerts in small venues. They go to a place in Indianapolis called The Vogue all the time, but they are a band that this album came out when I was in my senior year of college, and me and some friends really kind of latched onto it as a really good album. We played it a lot at parties. A bunch of my friends who really liked this album with me, they rented a house that year and had a really cool porch and an area to hang out outside, and we just all, you know, during the spring and during the fall, as this song was going on, we hung out at that house all the time, listening to this album and other albums, having a good time, and, you know, partaking in some adult beverages and just having a great time our senior year of college. And it was a song I've always remembered, still have it on my, you know, have it on my iPhone and play it when I'm, you know, out doing yard work or something. It's a song I remember, and it brings back lots of great memories for me of that, you know, that important year of senior year of college.
So do you have any specific memories that you would want to share?
I have lots of memories. I'm not sure I can share all of them, but it was just one of those things that, you know, I can remember sitting on the porch on a Friday night after classes were over, sitting outside when it was nice out, drinking a beer, all of us just sitting around talking about the week and talking about what we were going to do what we were going to do in the weekend and have fun. And, you know, it was just kind of our thing to do was have a music like that. This song was exciting, it was fun, and it was up a lot of energy to it. And it was just one of those songs that always made me think about having a good time with really good friends and just relaxing and knowing the week was over and you just kind of were ready to go do something fun.
So it's just a good, fun song you like to listen
to? Yeah, Bodines in general have a lot of good, fun party songs mm-hmm. and good sing-along songs mm-hmm. and stuff that you want to do together. And, you know, it was, you know, they were popular at that time, and they were, you know, a young college band and growing mm-hmm. and it kind of fit the place we were all in at the time, and it made it really fun to listen to it together.
Well, baby, ask me anything that you want, and I'll look you in the eye now. There can be no surprises, if we mean what we say. I've been around the block and I've done some things that I ain't so very proud of. Darling, help me leave this cloud.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds like a really great time. All right, so finally, the last song you chose was The End of the World by R.E.M. A pretty fitting song to end on. Anyway, it came out in 1987, and it's another alt-rock song. Why this one and the effect it had on you?
Well, R.E.M., I'm sure even kids your age know who R.E.M.
Yeah.
is. A huge band. Very, you know, have made albums for a long, long time. This was, you know, the opposite of the Bodines and Naked. Bodines was a good song to get the night going, energy. This is a high-energy song. Was always played at parties late at night when maybe everyone might have had a little bit too much fun. And it was one of those songs everybody knew all the words to. Everybody sang it together. And, you know, at a big party that night, everyone, this song would come on in the whole world. There was dances we did to it. And it was just one of those songs that was, you know, the top five or six party songs at college the whole time I was in college. You know, I think you said it right, came out in 87, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my 87 was my senior year at Carmel High School, and then 88 was my freshman year of college. And so that song was part of my college time the whole time I was in college. And it never lost popularity. And even today, when I've been down to Bloomington or Purdue and seen friends and their kids are at school, you hear this song still played at parties, and they all still sing it the same way and all do still the crazy dances we did back then. So it's lasted the test of time. Of a song. If you think about it, I'm 49 years old, and all of a sudden, it's still being played, you know, 25 years later at parties, and everyone still does the same things. So that you think about what REM created there for, you know, I'm sure they never thought this song would be still hugely popular.
Yeah.
30 years later.
Yeah. So moving on, your book selection, you're already given the complete works of Shakespeare and the Bible. What other book are you going to be bringing with you, and why?
Well, let me go back. One more comment on REM's song.
Sure.
All you younger kids need to learn up and look on the, you know, the web and go to a meme or something and find out what the sprinkler dance is, because that's the most popular dance to the REM song. So go look that up, and you guys figure out what that is. So say your question again on the book. Sorry.
Well, I'd like to go on with the sprinkler dance. What is it?
Well, it's a dance that you imitate a yard sprinkler. And, you know, you got one hand on the back of your head, the other hand acts like it's spraying water. And everybody does it together, singing this song. And there were other pieces of that called the lawnmower, where you act like you were starting a lawnmower. You know, it had all kinds of crazy dances. And if you look up REM, you'll and that song, I'm sure you can find some of the dances people used to do to it.
So looks like it's had a pretty crazy effect on the culture, you know, today and back then.
It was just something that it kind of exploded, and it just has kind of kept going.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to...
Yeah. Sorry, so moving on to your book selection, you already given the complete works of Shakespeare and the Bible. What other books are you bringing with you, and why?
Those are pretty two intense books, number one. Obviously, the Bible
and
Shakespeare's complete work. So they'll both take you a really long time to read, and they'll both have a lot of deep thought to them, right? A lot of analogy you can run in your head. Certainly inspiration, both sad, positive, all kinds of inspiration out of both those books, right? So you got to think about, you know, as I think about what I'd want to bring with me, I might want to bring something a little different, a little more energy, maybe a little more, you know, less complicated thought with a little more enjoyment to it at times. You know, Shakespeare certainly can be enjoyed, but I'm not sure I can read that every day forever. My book I would take would be a book called Red Storm Rising by Tom Clancy. Tom Clancy's a writer from the, I think he started in the early 80s and lasted up through the 2000s. He was a kind of a action thriller writer, mainly focused on, you know, at the time, you know, Russian spy novels, those kind of things. And Red Storm Rising is a theoretical book about World War III, and how it would start, you know, what would drive it all, who would be fighting who, how would it all work, you know, what was the battles. And, it, you know, I'm a big history buff and enjoy studying World War II a lot, and I take a lot of time thinking about, you know, trying to read about the history of our country and how it impacted, how, you know, how that generation impacted our lives and what they contributed to the world. So, you know, that kind of spurred my interest in Clancy. He was a great action writer. And I read a couple of his other books and got interested in what he wrote. And then this book came out, and it was really well written. And number two, it's pretty long, so it's something you can have with you, and you can read multiple times and still have new experience in it, get, you know, a little different view of it sometimes as you read it maybe a second or third time. And it was, you know, Clancy, I think he wrote like 60 books when he was, before he, I think he just passed away a couple years ago, and wrote a lot of books kind of all off the same genre of different spies and, you know, Cold War and that kind of thing, which was obviously incredibly, you know, a big piece of our country mm-hmm. for a long time. So he was a very good writer, a very interesting writer.
Yeah. So, anything you'd like to add about Tom Clancy, or is that it?
Well, it's funny. Clancy, you know, he was the first guy to really start writing that kind mm-hmm. of novel about that genre. And then a number of other writers spun off and did the same kind of things. And it created a whole other set of books that I've read. And, you know, there are several other writers that were really good that all, you know, they all developed together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the Cold War is gone now. So, you know, there's other genres of, you know, the Gulf War and those kind of things have turned into a whole genre of books. So it's interesting to watch how those things build upon each other. You know, it's just like songs. How do they build upon each other?
So, I mean, it seems like you've read a couple of Tom Clancy novels.
Yeah.
Just overall, the war aspect of it, I guess, and the action thriller aspect of it is why you're interested in it.
Yeah, the action thriller, the piece of it, you know, obviously war's a complicated, difficult thing, no matter how you look at it, but, you know, this was all fiction. You know, fiction that used all the modern day at the time military components, all the modern day theory of strategy, all that was built into it. And then, you know, Larry Bond was one of these spinoff authors. He had several really good books all based on the same kind of theories of, you know, Cold War, what happens if it escalates, and who would start what, and how would it all start, and, you know, how would the battles play out, who would win. All those things were thought through in these books in a lot of detail, and they used a lot of military historians and also a lot of ex-military people to help write their books. So they were very factual from a standpoint of equipment, strategy, theory. So they were very well written. So that made it more fun to me. There's a lot of other writers that wrote books like that, but they weren't near as well done.
Mm-hmm. So you said you were interested in World War II.
Yes.
What drove that interest?
You know, that's tough. You know, a lot of things probably drove that interest. Number one, I really respect and honor everything that those people did for us and what they did for our country and the world. So I think part of it was just out of wanting to respect them and understand more about what they really did and how they did it, you know, the challenges and the difficulties and the results of all these things brought upon their lives. And I think you've, as you kids have grown, I think you've seen a lot more people start thinking about that and respecting that, because, you know, certainly as each day goes by, there's fewer and fewer people left that actually fought and, or, you know, put the ultimate sacrifice out there. So, you know, I think that drove it. And then as I read more and more, I wanted to get more details and more information, and it just kind of built upon itself. And all of a sudden, it was something that was very interesting to me. And I've been fortunate enough now to go to Europe and see Normandy and D-Day and where all that happened. And, you know, there's some other things I want to do. And, you know, I want to go to Pearl Harbor and do some of those things where you really see some of that face stuff, you know, firsthand now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's something I want to continue as I get older. I want to continue to understand that and pay my respects to, you know, what those people did for us. And some of that is just gaining the knowledge that I can pass it on to other people.
So any other interest in history, or just specifically World War II?
World War II is my main interest. You know, that's kind of where I spent most of my time. I spent a little time researching World War I and a little bit of the Korean War, but mainly World War II, you know. And then as we talked about with the Clancy books, you know, the theory and all that of what the Cold War could have done, you know, all those books delve into a lot of video games that were really fun when I was growing up, that, you know, would be nothing in today's graphics world and complicated world of today's video games. But for my time, they were incredibly complicated and a lot of fun. So it kind of lets you take all those things you were theorizing in or respective history in World War II. It kind of lets you all of a sudden try to get just a little piece of, you know, what did they really do? What was it like to fly a plane? You know, you don't actually feel it, but at least you got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, that kind of, all those things start building it to make it more exciting to learn about that stuff.
So, interest in video games then, huh?
I do. I have an interest in video games. You and my other son have gotten me hooked on some games, and I really like it. You know, video games were, as I was growing up, you know, I started with the first Atari. real Atari, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, Atari's turned into, you know, being online and playing with thousands of people around the world all the time with incredibly well-done graphic games with amazing abilities to be very realistic. So, you know, it's for me, it's been fun to watch the evolution of that and actually be involved with kind of each stage of video games. You know, you guys now, I think you could buy an Atari system, theoretically the same system I grew up playing, for like, you know, $80. It's got almost every Atari game ever made built into the computer. You know, we had to buy those individually. You know, so now you can have everything. So, you know, obviously technology's allowed all that to just be, but now you guys can appreciate what those graphics were like versus what you get to play with in video games. Well, yeah, video games are a lot of fun. They're a good way to have a little, you know, mindless entertainment that's incredibly real, you know, realistic and fun to do.
So, all right, so we can move on now. Lastly, your lecture item. What will you bring and why will you bring this?
Well, it's kind of a combination item. I think if I really had to have something, I might want to bring an iPad with a charger and a battery so you could theoretically find a way to stay connected to the world, have some fun while you're, you know, there or wherever you go, and then maybe find a way to text or find, you know, help people find where you are.
Yeah.
So to me, it was, you know, sort of three purposes. Maybe help you get found, give you something to do while you're there, and give you some way to stay in touch with the world and say, oh, what's going on? You know, are they looking for me? Mm-hmm. All those positive things, right? Entertainment, you know, movies, all that stuff. Could you get it? So, you know, of course you have to have some signal.
Yeah.
That may not be so good, but at least you'd have something that was technology of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we're all spoiled by technology, and all of us want to have as much as we can all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it'd be nice to have a little technology. You got books. Maybe you'd be lucky to have your favorite songs. My songs would be on my iPad, and I could listen to them. So.
Alrighty, well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right, thank you so much for doing this. This has been Hayden Fronick, and if you would like to see more great content like this, go check out WHJE.com.